Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week, we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool? Is it shit? Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit? Welcome to the editor's meeting. The Cool Shit Podcast, episode 11. Hello, my name is Gareth Carter. We have some returning guests, which means they did well last time. Firstly, Shanice, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Second time. Third time.
Whoa, yeah, exactly. And Ben Jay, how are you going?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah? Not bad, yeah. So second time. I don't have Shanice's track record.
You don't but get the hat-trick ball. Yeah.
Shanice is so chill about it. She's just sat there like on her laptop, not even giving a shit. I'm like,
I am focused,
I've come with notes, I'm super prepped. I love your energy. It's awesome.
Okay, cool. All right, then. So the editor in chief of the Cool Shit newsletter, which, by the way, needs a better name than a newsletter.
The Cool Shit Experience.
Okay, the editor in chief of the Cool Shit Experience, James. How you going, mate?
I'm very well, feeling good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm in a good mood.
Oh, you are in a good mood, aren't you? You're perky.
I feel perky. Yeah.
Brilliant. All right. Well, let's not ruin that vibe. What have you got for us? First story, please.
Well, straight into it. Nice.
Straight into it.
So, Return of the King. After about 5 years off, Kendrick Lamar, who's a rapper, by the way, Gareth, and who is considered by many to be the GOAT, that means greatest of all time, by the way, Gareth, made a surprise return and dropped a new track. And the video's got a lot of attention because it features deepfakes of a fairly interesting bunch of blokes.
Right. Firstly, I want to come on to those deepfakes. Secondly, Shanice, you were laughing a little bit too hard then. It is jokes. Who are the deepfakes? Because as you say, there's some very interesting choices that he's made.
Yeah,
there.
I wrote them out. So you've got, it starts off with, well, actually, no, so I'm going to go in reverse order. So you've got Nipsey Hussle, who was a rapper who was tragically killed. Okay. Kobe Bryant, also tragically killed. Then Will Smith, it gets a bit weirder there. Then Kanye, who's pretty divisive. Then Jussie Smollett, which is wild. And then to cap it off, OJ Simpson.
Yeah. So tragically killed, tragically cancelled.
tragically cancelled.
Tragically cancelled for assaulting someone in front of the world.
Allegedly.
Who? No, we all saw it. We're talking about Will Smith.
Okay, no, yeah, sorry. I was talking about, I was still on OJ, but anyway.
I was going to say, I was going to bring up our legals. The legal department, we can say that Will Smith slapped this
one. I think that's definitely not allegedly. He did that in front of the whole world. I watched the video just now, actually. I thought it was brilliant. It feels really vital, and it reminded me a little bit of some of the places that Childish Gambino is going with This Is America. I think it's like part of that very urgent voice that you have in mainstream hip-hop. Shanice, what did you think of it?
I'm going to sound kind of negative because I did think the video was great. I didn't like the song, and so that sort of brought my attention away from it. And I think you need to listen to the words in the song in order to fully like get a real hold of the visuals. Like based on like a lot of the comments that I was reading on YouTube, a lot of them were saying that the words sort of matched when some of the transitions happened among the faces, and that makes sense. But I just couldn't get into it, so it was kind of difficult for me to really like care as much, if I'm being honest.
Do you think it's one where you need to watch it a few times, right, in order to get it? Because you're right, it made me laugh there where you said you need to listen to the words, because I don't think I listened to a single word. I was just like, oh, there's Will Smith now. So it's actually kind of distracting in a way. But to that point though, I think what it's meant to be, because the lyrics are meant to fit the person, and yeah, it's meant to be kind of adopting different perspectives that are all part of quote unquote the culture. That's why apparently he's gone for quite polarizing figures to kind of get across that the culture, whatever exactly that means, has to incorporate the sort of the very best, and then some people that might not be so well loved, like Jussie Smollett.
Ben, what do you think of this?
I think there's a couple of things that are interesting happening here that jumped out at me. The first one is a kind of technical level, just how far deepfakes have come. The first time I saw it, I was doing the same thing you were of you know, oh look, there's Will Smith. But the uncanny valley thing has now gotten so serious that there's a real sense of like it could almost be the person that it's supposed to be sat in front of you.
I mean, I've got to say, like, if you haven't watched this video, and if this does make it into cool shit, like just watch it for, like, the deep fakery is, like, you cannot tell that it's not that person. It just looks like that person, right?
Yeah.
And it's the switch as well, right? The moments that those faces become, like, morph and change, there's something quite profound about that. So a purely technical aesthetic level, I think it's a really, really kind of compelling video. To your point about the political commentary and, you know, the lyrics matching the song, matching the faces you're seeing, I think it's also really important to remember that this needs to be taken in line with the rest of the Heart series. So I don't know if you're a Kendrick fan, but, you know, this is the Heart Part 5, and Parts 1, 2, 3 and 4 also a commentary, and they're worth talking about. And I think that seeing them as a whole is really compelling and really interesting. So I loved it. I was blown away by it. Thanks for sharing.
I mean, I just was looking at how old Kendrick Lamar is, because it feels like he's been quite important for a while, and he's actually 34, and I wasn't expecting him to be 34, because I just felt that he was still a little bit younger than that. I feel like when you get to this age, if you're still up there, you're still making music, it's kind of like your fine wine moment. It's kind of like where you're sort of so on the money in terms of, if you get it right, of your creativity. It felt like he's exploring his creativity even more now. I don't know if it, as a Kendrick fan, would you say that's...
You know what, right? Well, I was having this conversation the other day. Kendrick Lamar kind of reminds me of David Bowie.
That
there's something like incredibly musical about what they, about who they are and what they're doing, but have been able to kind of adjust and adapt as times and sounds have changed, and have sometimes driven that, sometimes followed that. And I think there's something really interesting about artists that are able to really be quite chameleonic in the genre that they move in. And so for me, there is something quite Bowie-esque about Lamar.
Interesting point. So David Bowie, he was making his final album, was inspired by Kendrick Lamar and what Kendrick Lamar was doing with music, and specifically jazz, and taking that and sort of re-evaluating it. And there's a lot of jazz on David Bowie's last album, which was inspired by, in no small part, to Kendrick Lamar.
I had no idea about that. That's really cool. Yeah,
you're
really
a genius, cool. Ben. Hold on.
Well, I said it.
Huh? No, but he...
I said, for Christ's sake,
you made the point. I swear, wait, who compared him to David Bowie originally?
Oh, I did.
That's what I'm saying. And without...
Oh, okay.
Without all the book learning stuff, Ben felt the emotion of it and just knew. I've got a question, actually. I think we mentioned this. Would they have to, like, pay these people to use their likeness, do you think?
I'm now getting confused with where the rights lie in this, because, like you say, they look so like them, yeah? So forget about the apps for a second. Firstly, in that video, I'm sure he must have had to ask these people beforehand, right?
Yeah.
Wait, because I feel like you can't friends. Ask all of them.
Well, no, okay, right. I understand that, but whoever is looking after their likeness, he must have had to ask.
So Adrian Brody is in one episode of the new season of Succession.
Yeah,
but his likeness is in the second, another episode. But there's no point having him kind of in the background while they're doing a panning shot through a crowd of people. So they've just superimposed his face onto that second episode. Does he get paid for that? Like, it's not really him. He's not really there. Is he paid as though he has had a second appearance?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's as technology is just becoming so super exciting, and it's developing into places that, you know, we can create real likeness now. It's like it's opening up all these questions, right?
Is that exciting or incredibly dystopian?
I do think you'll still need a movie star or a music star to rise for their likeness to be interesting in the first place, right? So there would have been some hard work or some interest attached in the first place.
I suppose movie stars work too hard. We should probably give them a few days off.
Yeah, give the movie stars a day off.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then that's an interesting question. What if you're working with someone who's just really hard to work with? So like Jared Leto, famously difficult to work with. If midway through filming like the new Batman movie, or the not new Batman,
the Marvel
previously
one
new,
that he did, yeah, as well, right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But like Morbius, they were like, oh, fuck working with this guy anymore, can we just like deep fake someone who's a little bit more approachable?
I think we should deep fake you so you don't have to come into work anymore, James.
I love being here, Gareth.
You're the first one in the
office. Don't even think about it.
Is there another story you'd like to highlight?
Of course there is, Gareth. So summer's approaching. That means holidays, of course. And I have a fellow astrophile sat across from me in yourself, Gareth.
Thank you.
That was astrophile. So the world's first space hotel, which I'm realising now is a slight oxymoron, is due to open in 2025, apparently.
Is that an actual model?
I don't think it's there yet. What do you mean, the picture? I don't think that's...
What, did you say 2025?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That seems a lot. I think that they would have had it built by now if it's going, like, you know...
Well, you build it down here, though, wouldn't you?
No, I get that, right? But it feels like that is a project that is, like, quite far down the line, right? I mean, Jeff Bezos has only just got there. And he's only got to the atmosphere, right?
He only sort of skirted around the edges.
Let alone in 3 years' time, we're all like booking into a space hotel, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like it's dependent on other space ventures before they're really able to say, yeah, space hotel's gonna be open 2025. Assuming, of course, that Bezos' spaceship works or Musk's spaceship is affordable enough. But it's possible.
I don't think it's going to be cheap. I don't think it's going to be the choice of Butlins or Space Hotel. It's going to be extremely expensive.
Have they given any idea of how much expensive?
No, but the article that I looked at said this come under some criticism for being prohibitively expensive because that's kind of elitist. But I'm thinking, to your point, Gareth, it doesn't seem entirely kind of well prepared. So if they have to jettison a few billionaires into the atmosphere first to work out the kinks, that's okay with me.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it in a different way. If they lead a couple of muggles to go and test it, I'm free.
Oh, what, you're up for it?
Yeah, right. I mean, like, we should get in touch. Do you know who's putting this together? Who are the people behind this?
No, I don't know him personally. The Orbital Assembly Corporation.
Totally sci-fi. I do not trust them at all.
I'm starting to think I might have been mugged off here. They just put a lot of words together. They literally just means space building company.
I so badly want this to be true.
I think it came from a reputable source, which is hypebeast.com. So
fair, okay.
They're actually pretty decent.
I mean, if it's just some guy like cranking out some PR statements and with a nice CAD drawing, I really hope it's more than that.
I think I'd actually seen this in my many, many years of looking at cool shit. I think I might have stumbled upon this before, but now this is when it's been given, it's kind of been progressed and been given like an actual opening date.
This was a major announcement because I feel like something like this should have had like, you know, an event against it, or did they just like leak it out to Hypebeast? I don't trust this story. Do not trust it.
It's funny though, so I'm just reading it now, and considering it's a space hotel, they've described it saying they hope it becomes a space business park, which just sounds like you'd have a Currys and an Argos. It doesn't sound very intergalactic, does it?
Going bowling in space.
Didn't Domino's say a few years ago, like, we're going to be the first pizza joint on the moon?
Well, maybe,
So, like, as a bit of a stunt. And maybe Domino's will be, you'll be able to order a pizza.
It'll be really depressing if you get there and it's just, like, Westfield or something.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm thinking. Or the other thing that I'm thinking is this just what a cruise is going to be in, like, 15 years' time? Because I don't really want to go, like, in terms of, like, a sea cruise, except at least there you get a lovely sea breeze. Is this just a worse version of a cruise?
I think it's just a bit random. A holiday in space is very random. Obviously, there are loads of people who want, like, oh, I want to go to space. But overall, I just don't really see the benefits of going out there. And, like, I'm already a nervous flyer. I can't imagine getting in a bloody rocket back, like, you'd have to actually knock me out.
Jailbreaking gravity speeds.
Yeah, like, you'd actually have to, like, make me take many pills in order to, like, do that trip.
Well, you might have a good time, you never know. I don't know, you lot could seem quite down on it. Like, I would absolutely go to the space hotel. Like, like, we live in an atmosphere, so the way that we see the stars is not the way they actually appear. Once you...
Cheers, Coldplay.
Well, no, exactly. But when you're out there, right, like, you know, the holiday aspect of it, like, the, you know, the tourism aspect of it, the going on a tour, you're literally going to be able to see the universe like you've never seen it before. So for that, yeah, I'm saying that's a little bit more interesting to me than the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Fair.
And then, the second point is, I think we need to start to normalise space travel as something that we all do, because in a billion years' time, this planet is not going to be here, right? So we need to, as a human race, if we want to survive, we need to travel through space. And we are living at a time where billionaires are taking it in their hands to attempt to normalize that. And I can understand it's very elitist, but we will benefit from this moment in time, later on down the line when we start to become a spacefaring species.
I completely agree with you. And don't get me wrong, I would 100%, if I could afford to, I would fucking be there. That looks so cool. I think more interesting to me would be something like a moon base. Like
very Dr. No or something.
Yeah, go a little bit further. Have some sort of base on the moon. More than just a satellite.
I mean, a rave on the moon.
Oh my God, could you imagine? Hitler?
I mean, that would be amazing, right? Going raving. Where? The moon. You'd go, wouldn't you?
Well, raving.
On the moon.
The moon. Yeah, sure, of course I would. And I'd go to this as well. I'm trying to pick holes in it. Yeah, but of course I'd
really
go.
Definitely don't want to pick holes in it.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Yeah, but yeah, of course I'd go. It looks great.
Is there any...
I just want to say as well, I do like how you made it sound like that's the hill you're willing to die on. Often when people start a sentence with, we need to normalise space travel.
I'm not there. Like, we do. Interesting. All right. Okay, Shanice, have you got a story that you would like to bring to the Cool Shit editorial meeting this week?
So, I saw that there was a story going for SoundCloud. They've acquired a music AI system called Musio, which can predict what's going to be a top hit. And I find that crazy.
So in the 80s, there was a couple of producers called Stock Aitken and Waterman, and that's what they did. And they made the most dirty fucking pop music ever.
That's why you need a robot to replace them.
I find it very interesting, especially with SoundCloud, anything goes on there, anything is just uploaded. And I just can't, I wonder how music, that will change music if it is actually successful.
If the label, it means fewer people that you'd have to pay if it actually works. Because I assume there's people who have this role in a label thinking predicting trends and what's going to be popular. But what has, because it is weird with sort of music, how a song can just kind of capture the collective public consciousness and nobody quite knows why. It's not the sort of most artistically brilliant, it's just got the special sauce.
But that's the interesting thing, right? Because I think you talk about Stock Aitken and Waterman,
yeah,
or you talk about X Factor,
yeah.
What those things did was they didn't predict what was cool, they defined what it was. It was a bunch of advertisers or music execs who set out to make this thing through airplay, through TV, and through kind of sales culture, making a particular genre or band or artist popular. Are we now in a place where labels and publishers are disempowered from that to a degree? So we are things get viral on the internet, or TikTok music has been a huge part of how particular artists have become popular. That's not pushed, I don't think, as much. Maybe it is to a degree, but certainly less so than it was 20 years ago, even. There is a possibility that you can just break out because people have heard your music and like it. Maybe that's more exciting and interesting for the music industry.
Well, so what ends is this looking for the next hit, right? So why are SoundCloud, investing in this? Because it feels like they're not the right platform to do it, which I think might have been part
you think
of the
it
point.
But you think it'd be a label or something,
yeah,
rather
music
than
a label.
SoundCloud's
right?
Kind of the most democratic of all the music platforms. You're right, actually.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they're about to take a horribly dark turn then and just start this 15-year-old's going to be massive. Sign him up.
Yeah, I think that's what I was trying to say. SoundCloud is so vast, and it's not really. I don't know.
It's not just curated as much.
Yeah,
I can put
not,
a song on SoundCloud.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyone could. And
I will.
I'm just wondering, with this AI software, will it make everyone want to sound the same? How will it really analyse what really makes a hit? It's very subjective.
I think it's got to be... with my limited knowledge of algorithm technology, I believe it's going to listen to...
It'll listen to everything.
It'll listen to everything, and find out what the most popular music is, and then it'll break it down to, these are the genres, this is the BPM within that genre that does well, this is the... this is the type of, length of the song that would do well.
Sorry, you're right, though, because then the knock-on effect of that is because people could be tailoring their music to fit whatever the algorithm says is good. So there's a kind of homogenizing effect on music then, and you don't get your Bowies and your Kendrick Lamars and
so
stuff.
So I
like
think
that.
This is more scary than sort of that deep fake thing, because has anyone listened to AI generated music? Anyone?
Yeah, some bangers.
Some of it's like really good. Yeah. And you're like, right now I'm scared, because music is just, well, it's the that, and you know, painting, I guess, or drawing,
it's
the oldest form of self-expression, right? And it's one of the most important ones, right? But the amount of self-expression that goes into music is what makes it absolutely amazing. Yeah. But are we getting to a point where we can't even recognise that self-expression because it can be generated by a computer system?
Yeah. Have we even really had a new trend in music in the last few years anyway, right? Like I'm listening to a lot of like garage at the moment, but not garage. It sounds like the garage I was listening to in the early 90s, but it's actually garage that was made like now by young kids.
I totally agree with you. Yeah, no, I'm like, I utterly agree with you that like music doesn't feel like it's moved on that much within the sort of the last 15 years. I do see what happens is we mash up lots of different types of music now and that, but I can't remember the first time, like, you know, I've heard a new genre in the same way when I first heard garage, or I first heard drum and bass, or whoever, when they first heard rap music. I think that like there hasn't been that sort of clear distinction where you're like, wow, that's a new sound, or that's a new way of doing it. For
drill
a while
did that a little bit, like, but yeah, that's within did. Small kind of cultural enclave, and so grime kind of died out, and then drill took its place essentially. Like all most grime MCs that you can name are all kind of in their 40s now, like the well-known ones.
If you were in 1995 and you took kind of underground subcultural music from 1995 back to 1985 and were like, listen to this, people in the 80s, they would blow their minds. If you took a track from 2022 back to the year
2004, I don't think people would even notice. They'd notice some of that's crispy production. That's about it. They wouldn't be like, what the fuck is this? This is some sort of amulet from the future. Like, no, I totally agree with you.
I agree, but I slightly disagree in terms of that. I feel that it's good that you did bring up drill, but I do feel that UK urban music has made those changes. Like, of course, they like take from different areas, but like UK rap, but not so much rap. It's like a mixture of like R&B and rap sort of thing. Like they make their own like sounds and productions that aren't what we've heard before.
Like grime music is the most influential music that's come out of this country in the sort of the last 10 years, right? But I do also, I can hear a lot of garage in it. I can hear it, you know, I can hear like a different version of rap music in it.
Is that inevitable though? Because there's only so many BPMs and stuff that you can get. People have used them up. It's always going to be a version of something. It's quite hard to create an entirely original sound now, because people have been able to create all sorts of sounds for a fairly long period of time now.
I would like to think that the human race has some more fuel in the tank. We have more some sort of like unmined territories that we just can't see yet. There's, you know, a new type of way of composing music, or a new type of system to create music, which apparently is AI music, which is a bit depressing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I worry that that's going to be the next step from this, because I like to hear artists for like it's a lot of these people's lives. Like obviously there are people who are just doing it for money, but like music, it means a lot to a lot of people, and I'd really want to keep it like more authentic and not always trying to be a hit. Like sometimes that's really nice if you just want to make a song because you want to make a song.
More power to that.
Yeah, it's a very romantic view of the world.
I do like the fact that like generally on Cool Shit you bring stories that you're not fond of. You're like there's this thing I want to talk about.
What
are we
doing
like
here,
it.
Actually, I forgot about that.
No, but I do find it cool because it's like I'm interested to see what will come of it, but. Like I can find something cool and not really think it's like great. Yeah. like I just want to see what will come of it, and that's why I think like I want to understand if more people will think it's cool as well. So please put it in.
James, when you release that track on SoundCloud, what genre, what type of music, what's the track going to be?
It's sort of like farm emo.
Ben, do you have something to bring to this week's Cool Shit?
I do, and like Shanice, I'm not 100% sure it's cool. But it's interesting.
Okay. We're here for discussion as well. We're here for discussion.
So, I don't know about you, but I find reading things like privacy policies and terms of service and end user licensing.
Nerd alert.
I was going to say really boring.
I was going to say, where did you think he was going with that? But to be fair, I don't think I've ever once read one. So, nerd alert.
Super boring shit. In an effort to make it more interesting, I don't know if you guys saw this, Twitter turned their privacy policy into a game. A game that you can play where you're kind of a character with a dog, and it's kind of like Super Mario vibes, and in somehow in doing so you understand Twitter's commitment to privacy and then also how you should behave on the internet somehow.
Feels like a sort of like an educational piece,
right? It's one of the oddest things I've ever seen, and it I'm really curious how that got signed off in many ways. How someone at Twitter went, oh, well, you know what this privacy policy really needs? It needs a kind of 80s-esque platform game. Everyone would totally understand where we're coming from when we've done that. But there is something interesting in that, right? In like, companies usually, or in my experience, are trying to hide as much as they possibly can in things like privacy policies and end user license agreements.
Mm. There's that, and then the other thing is that we feel suspicious, don't we, naturally, of any sort of like long form copy where you have to sign anything. And the thing is, we don't ever read it, or most of us don't ever read it, but just feel a little bit pissed off, or it's kind of like an unwritten rule. We know you're hiding something in there, but it's so fucking complicated. We can't get to the bottom of it, so yes, all right, I'll sign.
Does making a game somehow make that... I mean, maybe it makes it more enjoyable, but I don't think I came away from it. My eyes glazed over just as much as it would have done if I...
Did you actually have a go on it?
I have played the game a little bit. It hasn't really made the whole thing...
Is it some sort of like platform game?
It's kind of like... It's quite retro-ish. 8-bit,
yeah, 8-bit, you're a dog, like, avoiding baddies, getting bones and stuff.
It's called Twitter Data Dash.
That's the one. One of the things that I think has been really interesting over the last couple of weeks, been talking to a lot of young people about social media and about the things they're worried about and scared about and think about when it comes to engaging with social networks. Privacy never comes up. Data privacy apparently is not a thing.
Zach's is just taken as a given that we're giving away all our data. I think we're in too deep now.
The one person I've spoken to who really had any sort of like interest in privacy and her data was Adele, of all people. And like everybody else, the kind of 30-40 people that I've interviewed over the past couple of weeks didn't even come up as a concern.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that they are so sort of a fay with it?
I think it's really complicated. As a topic, it's really hard to get your head around, and it's really hard to see what the negatives are without really stepping back from it.
Is it kind of like that thing, like, okay, so say if you were stealing from a shop and you'll run out, you think, oh, they can't catch all of us. It's like we're kind of all in this together. Everyone's giving. There's almost like a collective agreement that we're all potentially fucked here. And because didn't data? It was when that Cambridge Analytica thing came out. That was when data became like the most valuable commodity in the world that nobody really gives a shit about.
Totally, totally true.
Yeah, I think we'd all feel a little bit different if you know, these companies were sort of like making public our Google searches, as opposed to like your data. Kind of, the way I understand it is your data informs the way that we act, but we don't ever look at specific data. It would be more concerning to people, I think, once it was brought to a personal level. If that does happen, then that's where you'd see a shift in opinion about it.
If you've got nothing to hide, Gareth, you've got nothing to fear.
Well, no, exactly. but that's the point, because if you don't have anything to hide, like, you're like, well, does it actually matter?
So that's the thing. I think we assume that because it's all of us going through it, everyone together, and because these data sets are bought in like high volumes of like tranches of people, that your individual data can't be pulled out of that. Definitely can. I think that John Oliver on Last Week Tonight did quite an interesting thing around specific politicians and pulling out their data, having purchased it from like an ad company. So, and that's primarily driven by just the sheer volume of data points that is being collected around you that we're just not even slightly aware of. And like, it's quite scary. I don't think I know... even remotely, it's like a tiny slice of what's actually happening out there around our own data.
It's true. I mean, and where it comes interesting is when there is interest in that person. So for instance, you know, if it was Meta looking after your data and say that you are a person of interest, let's say Kanye West, right, for instance, right? And you know, that person was to pass away, in 20 years' time, there will still be interest in that person. Is it fair for them to then go into someone's private messages? Is it now like where we've got to the point of, no, you don't think so? But I feel like, you know, as with World War One soldiers, it's like completely fine for the BBC on like the One Show to read out really private things they were writing to their loved ones as they thought they were about to die.
Jesus Christ, I'd never thought of
no,
that.
No, I know that's just blown my mind.
Wow.
So like when we think actually this is important enough that everyone knows, yeah, and that data is now being kept and owned by, and these will be amazing bits of data, you know, messages from like some of the greatest people that are living at the moment that they're going
to
own.
You're right, actually. I'm thinking even like when I went to in Prague, I went to the Kafka Museum, and they've got like loads of stuff from his diary. Like, it was in his diary, he didn't get permission for that to be shared.
There's that book, Letters of Note, right, which is literally correspondence worthy of another audience. Now some of those people are famous, but lots of them aren't. Are we saying 30, 50, 100 years you'll be able to download data sets
of anyone,
of curated interactions that were intensely private?
Yeah, it's weird. There's like, whoa, a statute of limitations. Yeah, that's right. Mental. Or the opposite.
I'd never thought of that.
Who's the genius now?
You've given us quite the bombshell there. Wow.
All right, listen. Interesting stories there, James. You've got a lot to mull over. What are you thinking
about? I actually think they're all pretty strong, at least in terms of having some level of intrigue around them. In terms of a new one that I didn't bring, I actually really quite like the Twitter one, because I wasn't mad on it at first, but then to your point that normally it's something that you'd try to hide. This is almost a PR story for their privacy policy, which I just think is really interesting that I'd never seen before. So I think that will probably go in. Do I have to decide now, or can we leave it all on a bit of a cliffhanger?
Well, where can people further get the cool shit experience and find the stories, James?
Zachagency.com/cool shit.
Amazing. All right, then. Well, listen, if you want to find out what stories did go in, go and download the Cool Shit Experience, where James was talking about it, otherwise known as a newsletter.
Yeah.
Shanice, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime. And Ben, thank you very much for being on the podcast again, guys. James?
And you're welcome.
And James, I'll see you next week.
All right, nice one.